Hey everybody, and welcome to the 4th episode of Back Issues, a comic podcast so old that we have joint membership in both the AARP and the JSA. I'm your host.
So old we remember when Luke Cage had hair.
I'm your host, Jason. With me are Jamie.
Hi.
Dick.
Hey.
And our guest, Gwen.
Hi.
This episode's going to be a little interesting. We're not going to be discussing a plot line or a event. And this time we're going to throw... at least I'm going to be throwing my opinion. I'm not sure where everybody else lies, but we'll figure that out. DC fucked Barbara Gordon. This is a long-standing thing that's been dwelling in my head for years. And I know Gwen feels pretty much the same way because we've talked about it countless times. But when DC took Batgirl back in The Killing Joke and had her shot through the spine by the Joker, you know, everybody would think that, you know, kind of write the character out, but it didn't. In fact, we've argued separately in different conversations that it actually made her stronger. I mean, Gwen, you and I have had that discussion several times, too.
Yes, we have.
And then there's a feeling that there was finally a hero for the disabled person, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, she was a paraplegic, but at the same time, she was still working as a hero. Working as, you know, intel for Batman, of all people.
Wasn't the whole JLA at one point.
The entire JLA, Birds of Prey, independent work.
It is when she becomes Oracle.
Didn't she basically found Birds of Prey?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it was during the Oracle when she actually moved up to JLA level instead of just being a local hero.
I mean, she was pretty much the intelligence character in all of DC.
Right, right.
And that was really cool. And she still managed to do several cool things just from her wheelchair during that time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she had a reputation as like the world's best hacker, that kind of thing. It was cool. It was geeky, but it was still something that, you know, disabled people can look at and be like, hey, at least we got somebody.
Exactly. And what was interesting for me was that she wasn't just disabled, she's someone that became disabled later in life, and then instead of crumpling, decided to still find a use for herself.
Not only, you know, crippled later in life, but how dramatically she was crippled.
Right.
I mean, there's definitely an element of PTSD in there as well.
Yes, indeed.
And I'm not even going to, you know, touch the whole what did Joker really do to her, because that just gets into some really dark and creepy territory. But, I mean, this is a character who was put through hell to become crippled, not born with it. That gave it a little bit of extra strength, too. Like, she knew what it was like to have everything working and then have that taken away from her.
Yeah, like, it sucks to be born crippled, but I've had this discussion before. Being... born crippled, at least you learn as you grow up how to handle mm-hmm. it when you become, and you don't know what you're missing. When you know what you're missing, it's just this massive loss.
Yeah, it screws with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of have a mix of both. I was born with mental disabilities. I don't know what it's like to be sane, but I know what it's like to have working hands, and now I don't. One definitely bugs the hell out of me, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, this was her status quo for 23 years. You know, just confined to a wheelchair, being this crazy, intelligent hacker, you know, able to go up against regular supervillains, like, not even, like, C or D list, but Calculator, when his name actually meant something, when he was the big intelligence guy for the villains of DC. Well, last I knew, he still is, but this is, like, it felt bigger back then, at least.
Well, yeah, you got to think with the new 52, DC has had a lot of trouble finding its groove as of late.
Yeah. Enough so that they're talking, bringing back pre-52 stuff. And it's just, if the word continuity held any weight around the DC offices, I'd be surprised. But yeah, but let's get into the start of this.
They don't even keep their promises to their fans. Who cares about continuity?
Exactly. But let's get to the start of this. Before The Killing Joke. You know, Barbara Gordon is Batgirl. Part of, you know, the Batman family. What was it? Daughter or niece of Jim Gordon?
Daughter.
Daughter, yeah. But daughter of Jim Gordon, you know, Batman's biggest ally outside of his group of, you know, costumed accomplices. But, yeah, she was capable, you know, going hand-to-hand with you know, Batman's rogues gallery.
Yeah.
She was definitely more physically competent than most people. And hell, than even a lot of the freaking superheroes of the time. Because for some reason, if you had a bat on your chest, you could take down everybody. Yeah.
Well, then given that, it has to come with her, because a lot of the superheroes that are in DC have really incredible superpowers. There's not a whole lot of heroes that are like Batman and his Bat family. That they really take martial arts to the next level, and you know they have to be, you know, peak human physique and intelligence, because they don't have, they can't rely. This is an old argument, I know, but they can't rely on the invincibility that like Superman or Wonder Woman or super speed like the Flash, or they don't have a little cool little power like Green Lantern. No, they only got their wits. And their strength, you know, and that really what they need to be able to do what they do, and that, and she was part of that.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of nails it. So we're talking a human at the peak physical condition, and then the Killing Joke happens, and she goes to the other extreme, you know. But I want to actually talk about the Killing Joke. Dick.
Yeah.
I know it was your first time reading it.
Yeah, that was a little dark. a lot darker than I thought it was going to be. I was not expecting any of that, or for, you know, Joker to really... Like, I know he's been crazy, but, like, damn, that just was a whole another level of dark sadism that I never thought that he would... That he would come to, you know. Like, it always seems like it was about the laughs with the Joker. Of course, my experience with DC is the animated universe. So
the thing is, nobody was expecting that at the time.
Yeah,
nobody at all. I mean, comics were going through a really campy period, especially in the 60s and 70s. 60s with the sci-fi craze, and 70s with all the camp and all the weirdness. And by the 80s, you know, they really wanted to redefine what makes comic books. And there was nothing. No one had seen anything like that. Not since the old noir comics back in the 30s. You know, that was really, you know, it just changed the landscape. And I'm talking like, you know, sorry. It just said shockwaves, because no one had ever seen anything like that in a comic, especially at the time. And that's really just kind of what led to a new renaissance in comics, was the Killing Joke, that along with Watchmen.
I don't know. I would include some of Alan Moore's other work in there, too, though.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Like, definitely Miracle Man.
But those are the two best known, is what I mean.
Yeah. But yeah, it was that grim and gritty, you know, grim and gritty feeling to it that just made it sink, you know? It just felt like Joker was going to a whole new place.
That really just like, and that's what, where you got, that's how you got into the Burton Batman movies being so dark and gritty and
yep.
And with the Joker being so psychotic, was he, the Killing Joke really inspired him in that way? And mm-hmm. and he even writes the forward on the latest releases for that.
Huh. I don't remember what edition I have. let's see. Killing Joke.
It was the one that Daryl linked me to. It had a foreword by Tim Burton.
Yeah, I think mine does too. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, mine's the deluxe edition with the introduction by Tim Sale.
Well, to be fair, like I said, it was like nothing people had seen before in a comic. It inspired a lot of people, not just Burton.
Yeah, and the thing is, the 80s. They really had the idea of the grim and gritty reboot first and better, it feels mm-hmm. like.
Yeah.
Especially in comics. I mean, When was Daredevil born again?
Oh, I don't remember.
86.
Yeah.
And that was, good story. And then that day, the Punisher one, that I think that might have been Vietnam.
Yeah, Punisher was one of the big, big
was
ones
the nom,
that
right?
80s renaissance. He really just, you know, took off in that decade. And that kind of paved the way for the 90s anti-hero, where he kind of got bogged down in corporate bullshit, but you know how that is.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that the 90s anti-hero is definitely bad, it's just that it kind of got overused. But, you know, the Killing Joke was really just kind of what paved the way for heroes like Punisher and Cable and Lobo and
yeah,
like that. Deadpool.
Now, Deadpool, Dick.
Yes.
That the opening scene with Batman in the asylum, saying to who he thought was the Joker that he wants to find a way to end this before one of them has to die.
Yeah.
I mean, what was your take on that?
I mean, it's the logical thing to think when you're dealing with someone like Joker and you're the Batman, one of them is going to kill the other one. That's inevitable. There's no getting around that, you know? And so it definitely makes a lot of sense coming from him, but it definitely sets the mood for the entire book there of the Killing Joke. It sets it up to be this whole someone is gonna die, and nobody really dies per se, but Oracle, I can't remember her
Barbara.
Real name. Barbara. So much doesn't die as her identity as Batgirl dies. So it's not so much that Batman died, but he killed Batgirl in a way. And it's very interesting how that's one of the things that he wants to go talk to the Joker about. And you know, that's what happens while he's busy trying to go have that conversation. And it's a weird sort of parallel there, that this sort of thing that Batman wants to address happens to someone else that's not him because of the Joker. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think another big scene that really stuck out to me was that carnival ride that Joker put Jim Gordon on.
Yeah, that was pretty fucked.
That was really fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, that brings up the whole, I don't want to call it a... Well, I guess it really is a fan theory of what Joker did to Barbara. And if that's the kind of thing he's showing to her own dad, holy shit.
Yep.
How did this get put across DC editorial?
What is the fan theory?
That he,
I think I know
molested and or raped her.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Well, it's pretty much explained that when they find her, that not only was she shot, but she was stripped naked, and you see her naked in those pictures, although they don't show anything happening, but it is left to the imagination. What exactly is Gordon being subjected to? What's he seeing in these pictures that we don't see?
Yeah. But at the same time, I'm kind of glad they leave it just up to interpretation, because...
Well, that's the part of the book that kind of does play into Joker's psyche, because the human mind, what the human mind is capable of coming up with on its own is far more fucked up than anything you could, the writers could, and the artists could come up with, you know? Leave it to the person's imagination. Their mind will go to the darkest places.
Oh, great, so I'm no longer really disturbed by Alan Moore's writing and such. I'm disturbed by, you know, my own psyche. Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow, holy shit. I mean, that's one way to look at it, yeah. But definitely, though, like, it's a great way to write something and leave it up to interpretation. It's a talent. And what's been done here is a very interesting take on that, and it's really well executed, because it's just the faintest outside edges of pictures and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's never, you never see one of them fully dead on. And that's what really really fucks with you, is because you don't know exactly what happened in those pictures at all. There's no way to know, because you don't see all of them.
Now, here's what I gotta really ask, especially to you, Gwen, because I know you're gonna be interested in this. The upcoming animated adaptation of The Killing Joke, how the fuck are they gonna get away with it?
I have no idea.
Unless they're expecting to pull a Deadpool.
Yeah, which they like, probably are.
Rated R, I think.
I could tell you right now, I would have much more respect for that if they don't let the censors and the morality police chop the movie up before they put it out in the theaters. You know,
like, if they do a good job of this, who knows? Maybe we'll get Oracle.
Maybe
we'll get Oracle back. There's a chance.
Maybe, hopefully. Yeah, get her back. That's the important thing, you know. We'll probably get to that later on, though.
Yeah.
But well, now, do you think that they'll just straight retcon her being able to walk again, or do you
hold
think
on.
That they'll...
Well, we'll get to that, too.
Okay.
Alright. Now, I'm seeing things that this adaptation may be even rated R. So, that may... We may have another, Deadpool situation on our hands. Just not as funny as...
Well, one thing Alpha Mega Sin was saying a while ago, he said that, there have been R-rated comic book movies. I think the thing that he misses, though, is that there are not R-rated superhero movies. I mean, there have been plenty of R-rated comic book movies. Conan, what are some of the other ones? Sin City... along those lines, Spawn. No, well, that Spawn was PG-13. I think.
Yeah. Okay. But that's true. The '80s Punisher with Dolph Lundgren was rated R. But let's get this back on track. Now, Killing Joke, Barbara Gordon becomes crippled for 23 years. 23 years in a wheelchair. Granted, it's some unknown amount in DC's sliding scale of freaking comic book age. It's not like they keep track somehow.
It was actually like 3 years.
Yeah, well that does make sense, because how old would Batman be now? He'd be like 100.
True. But so 23 years later, they decide to go, hey, let's undo this one.
But, get on that, you're right. It really does, when you look at how the things that happen post The Killing Joke with Batgirl, it's like one thing you were saying earlier, how she deals, most people in that situation would crumble. She not only overcomes it, she becomes bigger and more powerful than she comes with, for the sake of the, steal Star Wars, or now become more powerful. The whole thing with her becoming like the information broker to all the big superhero groups, including the JLA. She becomes one of the most important characters in the entire DC, just not just in the Batman mythos.
Yeah, and she's not just another Batman clone anymore.
And let's look at it from a number situation. You can say, maybe she just wasn't as a character selling that well. Well, bullshit. She had her own several miniseries over the years, as well as Birds of Prey, where she was a main character that ran for... years. I think better part of the 90s there was a Birds of Prey.
You think it has anything to do with social justice?
No, I'm not going to go that far. I think it really comes down to DC.
Sorry, I was going to make a joke here at Marvel's expense. Just be like, DC's trying so hard for something successful. Happy Marvel. Nah, I'm just kidding, though.
But yeah, I think it comes down to money. They built up Barbara Gordon a following, and they said, maybe these people will be on board with the idea, and we'll go back to her being Batgirl, where she's even more recognizable.
It's because they wanted another Bat property to exploit. Bat anything sells pretty well when it comes from DC. Batman, I mean, look at Batman vs. Superman. How's it doing in box office right
it's,
now?
It's bombing hard.
It's tanked.
Well, it's tanking
hard. Not quite as hard as Fantastic Four, but it's tanking. You know, it's definitely not living up to expectations, let's just say.
Well, good. Okay, at least the public has some sort of taste. But if you take a look at a lot of Batman things, though, Batman sells like hotcakes. Batman is one of the most iconic things ever. So if you can make Batgirl, which appeals to the female audience, maybe we can make more money off it, is what it feels like to me.
Birds of Prey appealed to the female audience.
Yeah, that was the whole point. It was literally female empowerment, the super team.
This has to do a lot more with
brand recognition.
And it did
it without
though.
Any stupid dialogue, like what they put into the like Thor, female Thor shit.
Yeah, they really had. I think, you know, it's not just
they
the
just
money.
It was a superhero team that just happened to have women on all women on it. That's why it was good.
Yeah,
and they did have male like secondary characters that floated in and out.
Exactly.
So, but this is the you know just be you know identity politics really isn't what drives you know maybe it might be the initial ideal behind it, but what drives it and makes it good is the writing and the characterization. Because all that other horse shit just doesn't move anything. And you've seen that with Femme Thor, especially. Femme Thor has been a disaster for Marvel. And Birds of Prey, that was an incredible addition to the DC universe.
Well, like, even if you look at the story where they bring back her ability to walk, it's kind of a mishmash.
Yeah, it's a mess. All right, let's get to that then. So 23 years later,
let's move on.
Oracle the Cure brings back Barbara Gordon's ability to walk with, you know, a storyline that just feels so thrown together and ad hoc and just complete. It's a mess.
I know very little about comics, and even I can tell that this makes no sense.
No, it is a big mess, and I'll tell you why. Yeah, this is coming out of the start of an era where comics became less about the art and the storyline and more about pandering and business. I think it's they've made it pretty clear that that they want to appeal to certain demographics, let's say, and there are a lot of people in these demographics that don't like A, that she's wheelchair bound, or B, how she got wheelchair bound, or C, what happened to her while she was getting wheelchair bound. You know, and you know, I'm sorry to jump ahead, but yeah, it really just kind of foreshadows the modern mess that is both PC and Marvel.
Oh,
you know, because they're both in the states of shambles right now, and not DC or Marvel Cinematic Universe notwithstanding.
Sorry, I'm confused. The storyline was not Batgirl the Cure. That was me thinking about something Gwen and I were talking about before the show started.
Right.
The character of Wendy. That's where
well,
she
yeah,
gets.
But it was more or less the lead-in for. That, which did, oh, yeah. I think it came a few years later.
The Darkest Reflection was the storyline.
Yes, that, uh-huh.
But, yeah, it was still not anything like,
I think that occurred, like, right before, if memory serves right, it was right before the New 52 happened.
It was after Flashpoint.
Yeah, it was after Flashpoint, therefore part of the New 52, and that's, you know... I think we've established that the New 52 has been a really much... it's been a failure for DC Comics. They have done so much to mess up that relaunch. And it has not been well for them. And you can look at Darkest Reflection as a key example of this, how they're willing to screw up their own established storylines, you know, thinking that they're doing something good, but they're just, you know, it almost feels like, not to be critical of them, but I feel like a lot of, okay, you know how Batman and Robin, the movie, people complained it was way too much like the 60s show?
Yeah.
And I feel like the same thing that they're doing here. They're dragging Batgirl back to the Yvonne Craig era. And nothing against Yvonne Craig. She was a wonderful actress, and I think that character was one of the high points of that series. But it just kind of underscores the current direction of the comic book industry to go to lightweight pandering, you know, trying to make lowest common denominator storylines.
But they're not trying to, they were making more money before they started doing all these changes, though, so why'd they do them?
I'm gonna say, actually, the thing is, I've said this before, both Marvel and DC are finding far more success, recent flops withstanding, success with the TV and the movies. And as a result, for one point, they can go back and redo storylines for people who don't know about them, which is what Marvel's doing with Civil War. And for two, they don't have to come up with new things, you know? And these movies and the TV shows, they bring a much higher gross, and so they're just letting the comics rot on the vine, so to speak. They're not putting the effort into them. They're not finding the best talent. In fact, if anything, the people that are running them are finding people who are completely untalented and just plain suck at what they do. But like I said before, it panders to certain demographics. So, you know, that's what these people are interested in, because they're not in the part of those businesses that are making money.
Yeah. But yeah, just found something interesting. 23 years of, Oracle in continuity come down to 3 years.
Yeah.
So she was paralyzed for 3 years. And supposedly, here's the worst part of how hand-waving it gets. It was a natural recovery.
Okay. That's not even... How do you even consider that? You can't even consider that a hand wave, because you don't recover from paraplegia. You can't. It's
especially
impossible
when it comes from damage to the spinal cord by bullet.
Yeah, we have not reached a point in medical science where you can reconstruct the spinal cord and have it actually work. And it just. Now, I know this is comics, and to have a fantastic solution, that would be different. But just to say it magically healed, I mean, you know, maybe that'll work for Wolverine, but it's not going to work for Batgirl. You know? And how do you put it on the other... I'll shoot on the other foot. There's already another Batgirl. Actually, there have been two Batgirls now. After Barbara Gordon. You know, Chris Sanders Kane and Stephanie Brown, I think, was her? One that was Robin became the third Batgirl.
Yep.
Are we just going to throw them out, too? I know Cassandra Kane's Batwoman now, but, you know.
No, Cassandra Kane goes by the name Orphan now.
Guys, I know how we can fix this.
I know you can't see this, but I'm face-palming so hard.
I know.
I figured out how we can fix this. We put Two-Face in a wheelchair.
What?
Why?
Two-Face, no legs.
please enlighten me, Dick. I gotta hear the reasoning behind this.
Well, clearly you guys are just mad that there's not a character in our wheelchair, so we'll just put Two-Face in a wheelchair. That's how it works over at DC, right?
That's not why we're mad, though.
Alright, hold on. These are... Now, we've been talking about how it might be because of certain social agendas, but remember, DC is also the company that wanted people to draw pictures of Harley Quinn naked committing suicide.
Yeah, that's part of a contract.
I hate to say it, but I don't think that sort of thing is outside what Harley... Well, you know, maybe... No, I take it back. Harley Quinn's not going to shoot herself. She's going to shoot somebody else.
Yeah.
She's more likely to shoot someone else and then get naked and take the dead body.
I don't think her getting this naked was is probably is too
no.
Hard
this
small.
Was prob these. The thing is, there's a lot more social whatevers aren't necessarily what causes decisions like these. Sometimes it's just someone going, "Oh, I really love Barbara Gordon when she was Batgirl. Now that I'm in charge, I'm going to make her Batgirl again," because that motivates a lot more decisions.
You could seriously just call that joke Asada syndrome.
Yep. When the EIC just suddenly says, "Hey, you know what? We're going this route now."
But people don't like that. I don't give a fuck. Joe Quesada syndrome, or you could call it Dan Slott syndrome. You know, he pretty much is the Robin to his bat douche.
Yeah, I mean, so it gets worse though. Let's keep going with this. So the storyline happens. Batgirl's back to being Batgirl. For some reason, she doesn't really do anything with her skills as Oracle. Not really, she does a little, but it was like the years as Oracle kind of never really happened.
Oh yeah, that's just poor writing. Yeah.
What I don't get is why she had to go back to being Batgirl. Why couldn't she just keep being Oracle but not being wheelchair bound, you know?
She should stay in the wheelchair too, just for the hell of it.
The whole purpose of being Oracle was her making up for finding a niche for herself in the world, despite her disability. That's what made her awesome.
Here, I'll compromise with you, Jason. How about we put her on a walker?
Yeah, I could just see that. Her hitting Poison Ivy over the head with her walker. Oh no, Poison Ivy's a good on the good sides now, right? Never mind.
Well, yeah, the whole thing is just a mess.
To me, it reeks of marketing and poor decisions made by suits in a boardroom.
Yes,
that's what it smells like to me. It smells like
marketing,
it's literally a marketing
is
grab.
The death of art.
Yeah.
No one, I think we've seen, you know, if you followed movies or you follow TV or comics or video games or anything, you know, that's artistic at all, you know that the one thing that will destroy art more than anything else in the world is marketing executives. They're worse than moral guardians. You know, they're worse than government censors, you know, which is saying quite a bit because those two things are very damaging in their own right.
Yeah.
But in any form of artistic media, if you ever turn over the reins to market executive, you got a 99% chance that thing is going to tank and tank hard. And you know what? I'm going to go out and say it. That's why Batman versus Superman probably tanked, because they let the marketing department make the decisions on that movie. Or otherwise, why the hell else would they have gotten Ben Affleck to play Batman?
Well, I don't think DC's really been killing it with their film department, film properties for a while now.
Aside from the Nolan Batman films, no, they have not.
The only good DC stuff tends to be the animated universe.
Oh, the TV, Arrow and Flash are doing quite well.
Oh, and I liked TV. I liked the 80s Superman movie with Lex Luthor, but that's because I'm lame.
Well, everybody liked that movie, I thought. It's a good movie. You know, it feels like a comic book movie.
Yeah, that's why I like it. It's basically the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, you got Christopher Reeve, who's probably the only person who has not played, well, at least no one who has come after Reeve. Yeah, who has not played Superman on a big screen and come off stiff. I don't know what it is. Why is it so hard to find somebody who can play Superman and make him likable? Yeah, I don't know.
Now, I want to bring you to something newer.
Okay.
Batgirl number 49. Barbara's chasing after a character named Fugue, who has the ability to go into people's minds and do shit, like real fun shit, like implant false memories. And one of these false memories you see is the Brian Bolland Joker with the text smile on it.
Yeah.
And a picture of the gun that shot her. Implying these are false memories.
Wow, that really? They actually went there?
Yeah, oh God,
and
no.
The same day, the writer posted a tweet with the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man meme where it looks like he's like grinning really weird.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, "We undid some things." Implying they just retconned the Killing Joke.
Well, as I've said before, one of the big problems with the modern comic book industry is that it's poorly choosing what audience it wants to write to, so to speak. And I think in a lot of... But we remember last year when they had that spread of Batgirl... comic covers, and the one with her being held, having the gun held to their head by the Joker was pulled because it made certain people upset. You know, big 90-foot-tall air quotes on certain people, but you know, I think that is the audience that they're trying to appease, because this is about the same time where they started making changes to Wonder Woman that were pretty disgusting. One thing that stood out to me, it's always been long-standing canon that on the Amazon island where Wonder Woman was born, that men weren't allowed.
Nope.
Now back then, if a man shipwrecked on the island, they wouldn't, you know, what they would do is they tell him that he's not welcome here, they give him a boat, they give him food and water, and they'd sail him away. Now what they do, apparently, and this also ties to the fact that back then, Wonder Woman, Amazons were created by statues and breathed life into by Hera. But now, in this new continuity, what they do, apparently, and this is really gross in my opinion, they kidnap men who are shipwrecked, drag them onto the island, rape them to have children, and then kill them. And if any males are born from the union, you know, the males are put down too. And this is apparently what DC finds acceptable.
There are some variations on the Amazon mythos, not from DC, but just in general, where that is said to have happened. But I don't see why they go in that direction.
Yeah, but I'm talking about specifically the DC mythos with regards to Wonder Woman.
I don't see
why
they go in that direction.
That's the same reason I think they're going in the Barbara Gordon direction.
I disagree with you.
Well, okay. What do you think, then?
I don't know what I think. I don't know who's in charge. I don't know what's going on. I do know that these same DZ people have done some really horrific stuff in regards to women, at least a couple of times. I don't think it's this anti-male crusade. I think it's just people are being really dumb, and they're not communicating with each other.
Well, I think we could definitely agree on the people being dumb part.
Don't attribute to malice what can easily be attributed to stupidity, marketing, and no oversight.
You have a good point there. I don't discount anything in that. I'm just, you know, I just noticed some disturbing trends is all.
I noticed very different disturbing trends.
I'm certain I had no reason to believe that both are not occurring concurrently.
I don't know.
We'll see, you know.
Well, here's the thing. The disturbing trend you're referencing would also not like doing that, because women are supposed to be perfect and not do bad things.
See, here's my reason I don't think that's right, is because DC has floundered in the recent past between doing
DC
things...
has actually floundered for several decades.
You know what I'm saying, though. It's
they,
like more
kind of,
yeah.
You know, throughout the 2000s, they did little, but go ahead.
With their gender issues. I mean, they shit-canned an entire storyline of Batwoman getting married because she was a lesbian.
Yep, they did.
Yeah. Well, if I can clarify, I think what the thing that I'm worried about is I think we're all familiar with the Comics Code Authority.
Oh, that's God, what, yeah.
That is what I worry that we're heading towards.
A new
Comics
Code.
There's a resurgence of the Comic Code Authority under this new wave of moral guardians coming not from the extreme right now, but to the extreme left.
Maybe.
That's just I worry about, though. You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I could see a loose version getting in with the big two, but not the indies.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, I don't see the indies bending over for it. They're just as quick to say, fuck, you were doing it anyway. We don't have to have your little stamp.
Mm-hmm. The problem with big companies is marketing is you've got several tiers, each with their own fears and wants, pulling the creativity in various directions, biggest being marketing. And marketing does whatever marketing feels is the safest thing to do. And all you have to do is sound really, really loud. You don't have to have numbers. You just got to sound like you do. And marketing just pisses their pants and caves. So that's all you have to do to get marketing to do whatever you want them to, because they will piss their pants, because marketing has no bravery. They don't have the time to pay attention to see if something's actually okay. They just piss their pants. And the bigger the company, the faster they piss their pants. That's what usually happens.
You want to piss marketing off. Piss make marketing piss
you
their
can't
pants
piss
even
them
faster.
Off.
Don't
you can
buy
do is scare
it.
Them.
Wait, I'm not trying. That's not what I meant. I meant not piss them off and make them piss their pants. Don't give them money for this shit. That's the best thing to do.
Well, yeah,
thinking,
that's
oh,
really
shit,
what it comes
oh,
down
crap.
To.
We just rubber stamped all this stuff and it's not selling. That front office ain't gonna be too happy about that, and some people are gonna lose their jobs.
People have been losing their jobs, but
yeah,
when it comes
right,
to especially... like the cover, the Killing Joke cover, that whole fiasco is just about who shouted the loudest, because marketing pisses their pants if you shout at them too loudly. But marketing, over time, looks only at the mathematical numbers. It'll take a while, but marketing will learn which side their bread is buttered on. But they will always respond immediately to yelling with the thing that is the most minor they can come up with.
Well,
the least effort
that's
possible.
That's why I've said that moral guardians have always had so much power in the entertainment industry, because they know how to yell and they know how to get listened to. Better
mostly
than most
it's social
people.
Media magnifying nowadays.
Unfortunately,
social media
that is
shit
a, that
and
is
doesn't
problem.
Represent your audience.
Yeah. I mean, marketing is a strange beast. But I can't say anything because I don't know. Like, I've never been there. I've never worked for a comic company. Dear God, I hope I never do.
Don't.
Kind of sad that we have to think that way, because I think a lot of us would have wanted to, you know, if we had the chops, do something like that. And now we have to look and see, you know, we see the state that DC and Marvel and, you know, are in. And
which is good.
I mean, I'll still work for Image.
Yeah, we can always go to Image, you know.
But no, it's a good thing. If DC and Marvel fall, that means something new can rise out of the ashes. DC and Marvel are mostly just rehashing stuff that they've already pretty much done and doing stupid changes.
They're not sick of rehashing stuff, which is why they're doing cinematic stuff now, because they can rehash it and get a wider audience.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, if DC and Marvel die, it's not the end of the world. You still have everything they've already done. You can probably find it somewhere.
I don't think they die permanently and altogether. I think the comic books eventually go away. And
okay.
It becomes a bigger focus, which will make it an even bigger focus on TV and movies. I think that's the direction that they're both looking to go.
Okay, well then other people pick up the slack.
Microphone.
I think other people have already picked up the slack, to be honest. I mean, you have to look, I mean, the independent comic scene throughout the internet is thriving right now, but you know, it's not like any other artistic industry. Microphone, it's not activated. Easy to break in, you know, and there's a lot of competition out there.
Webcomics are doing just fine, and many use comic book style art.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read a webcomic in ages.
I read lots of superhero webcomics.
I meant lately, I've been read a lot of more Magnesque and Slice of Life comics. You know, rather, I haven't really found a good independent comic that does the superhero angle. At least not on the internet.
I have.
But yeah. Let's, you know, bring it back home. We only got a few minutes left. So, in the end, what we have from DC is a continuity clusterfuck filled with plot holes, literal impossibilities, and 23 years of dragging their nuts right across our face, and us calling it fucking top quality entertainment.
Well, if I can say anything, I think you mentioned this earlier. This is a problem of when staffing in comic books changes guard. Unfortunately, some people don't want to go in a direct. Well, not unfortunately. Sometimes it's better to go in a direction, which is why a different direction was why the Killing Joke works so well.
Yeah,
but unfortunately, now we're seeing the opposite happen. In comic books right now, we're seeing the current status quo. They want to go in a different direction, and it's not a direction that a lot of people like. And you know, unfortunately, we as consumers, we don't really have any power to change this other than to not buy what we don't like, vote with the dollars, so to speak.
I'll be honest. Other than paperbacks, I haven't bought a DC comic since. God.
The last DC comic I read, I got out of a cereal box.
Nah, for me, it's got 2000.
It was a Cyborg comic, so it was pretty good.
2002?
Yeah, I think it was 2007 I got that one out. You know, it was about right around when Teen Titans was big, I think. Like I said, it's the TV and the movies is where they're making their money now. I went to the Teen Titans. That's a classic. And you throw out go.
Yeah. But that's how it feels to me. It's like I said, 23 years just having their freaking nuts just scraped along my face, and me being told this is a good thing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's probably how people felt when the comic code authority got a hold of the. In fact, I know that's how people, because I've read a lot of the history about the CCA, and people hated it from the get-go. You know, people who actually read it and enjoyed comic books. You know, they did eventually find a groove where they could work inside the regulations, which is why superhero comics became so. Prominent, because one thing I want to touch on this really quickly. The one thing that came out, the one thing that died off very quickly because of the comic books code authority, is the biggest thing that died off was horror comics, and the most notable, Tales of the Crypt.
Yeah,
you know, that was practically murdered by the comics code authority. You know, and a lot of it's. And a lot of its, related titles. And, you know, that's also another reason why Mad Magazine came about. And the reason they called it Magazine, because if they called it a magazine, then because it was made by the same company, the same guys, William Gaines, who made Tales of the Crypt. And they rebranded it Mad Magazine so that the CCA wouldn't apply.
Yep.
A little bit of history there.
But, so yeah. 23 years that somehow is only 3 years in continuity.
You want to hear something really kind of funny. The big two comics you mentioned, who do you think was the third? I mean, considering all the third biggest comic, considering all comic company, considering all the history of comics in the last close to 100 years.
God damn.
I'll give you a hint. These are the people that actually were backing the CCA. Archie Comics.
Oh, really? I would never have thought.
Archie Comics were the third biggest, you know, throughout. You know, they weren't initially. It started in the 40s, but with the CCA and the fact that so much of their competition died off, they were able to pull up, you know, near DC and Marvel.
Huh.
And they've all, you know, that, and they've never, you know, that's the one that, that's one thing that always flies under people's, when they talk about comics, they don't really know that Archie Comics was one of the big, biggest names after the CCA, and a lot of people say it's because they backed the CCA so hard, because, and they got, it allowed them to get bigger. And by the 70s and 80s, they were starting to pick up other titles. Most notably the Sonic the Hedgehog comics.
Yep.
You know, all things aside, I have read a lot of Archie comics. I don't think it's anything we're probably going to get to in any of these, but they have their own charm.
Never my thing, honestly. Actually, I did read their Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comics, though.
Yeah, they did those, too. Not at first. I think those were independent at first.
Yeah. Well, this was the version that was basically based off the
TV series.
The 87, yeah.
Those are not comics that those versions of the comics, I think most fans of TMNT would not consider, kind of disown those comics, because they're not really the same gritty level of comics, and they don't have the same charm that the TV series did.
Yeah. You know,
even though the TV series was sanitized, it had a charm all its own.
Yeah. Well, you know.
So, unfortunately, if you think about it, you know, this is just another phase in the evolution of comics. It's just not one that any of us, I think, are particularly excited about. And, you know, we'll see if something good comes out of it, because some good things, unfortunately, as bad as the Comic Code Authority was, there were good things that came out of it, you know.
Yeah. There were some interesting ways they worked around things.
Oh, that, believe me, they found lots of them. Stan Lee was a master of manipulating the CCA to his advantage.
Well, in the meantime, I think we've gotten where we wanted to go with this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So, for back issues, I've been Jason. With me is Jamie.
Hey.
Dick.
Hey.
And Gwen. And on that note, we'll catch y'all later.